Now can you hear me? Oh yes, this is a difference like day and night. So as I was saying, I appreciate this opportunity to give this seminar in the Bhagavad Gita class. Vaisheshika Prabhu, before he left, was very desirous that those who are taking the Bhakti Shastri course consider giving a seminar in the Bhagavad Gita class. So right there, we got some empowerment to do this, some encouragement. And so the topic that I've selected for today is this topic, action in Krishna consciousness is superior to work or what is called fruitive activities. And it's a topic that I'm going to talk about which comes directly from the Bhagavad Gita. We will go into the main verse that addresses this, a key verse, and then we will look into a set of supportive verses that actually supports this thesis that action in Krishna consciousness or work in devotion is better than renouncing work per se. And this is a major message that Krishna is conveying to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. So, this comes from the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. You have your Bhagavad Gitas in front of you. And I'll bring up some verses from there. Feel free to walk through it because it will serve as a good reference for your purpose. And actually, it is chapter 5 which really begins with this, Arjuna's inquiry to Krishna. That is the context. He's asking Krishna. He says, "O Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now, will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial?" So Arjuna has posed a very incisive question. If we are to look at the context of this, a little bit of a historical survey of how it got to this point that Arjuna is asking this question, the Bhagavad Gita at this time, then we can actually trace it. We can trace from what Krishna has said prior to this. Firstly, at the outset, we'd like to say that in this fifth chapter, Krishna is going to make the case that devotional service is easier than mental speculation. It is better than considering renouncing of work, because it is transcendental in nature and it frees one from reaction. That is why devotional service is better. Now, how did we get here in this at this point? The Lord, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, pointed out that the living entity, the soul, has become conditioned by taking the body, he has become entangled. And he points out the difference between the body and the soul. These are the cluster of verses in the second chapter from 13 to 30, where Krishna outlines the spirit soul. And then he talks about how the spirit soul could become free from entanglement by proposing buddhi yoga or devotional service, which he outlines in verses 39 and 61 of the second chapter. And then he will pick up on that again. Then in the third chapter, the Lord explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. This is text 17 in the third chapter. And then in the fourth chapter, on transcendental knowledge, the Lord tells Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, text 42, the Lord will advise Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by Krishna simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, because he says perfect knowledge, and the person who is in knowledge doesn't have any duties to perform. By stressing this, he has perplexed Arjun and confused his determination. So Arjun is saying that on one hand, you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work in devotion. Which one is better? That's the context from which this comes about. Arjun understands that renunciation in knowledge is like not working. It involves cessation of all kinds of work performed essentially as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then he's wondering, how is work stopped? Krishna is saying work in devotion, but at the same time in knowledge, there is renunciation. In other words, Arjun thinks that sannyasa or renunciation in knowledge should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood Krishna's message that work in full knowledge without attachment to results is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires therefore, so Arjun actually missed the point, therefore he's inquiring whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. So we should look at then Krishna's answer to this question, which is given in the second text of the fifth chapter, and we will look at this in detail. We'll actually cover this verse. This is on page 230 of the Bhagavad Gita. You can repeat after me. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sannyasa Karma Yogascha Nishreyasa Karau Ubao Tayostu Karma Sannyasat Karma Yoga Vishishyate. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, the personality of Godhead, said, sannyasa, renunciation of work, karma yoga, work in devotion, cha, also, nishreyasa karau, leading to the path of liberation, ubao, both, tayo, of the two, tu, but, karma sannyasat, in comparison to the renunciation of fruitive work, karma yoga, work in devotion, vishishyate, is better. Translation. The personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation, but of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Please repeat. The personality of Godhead replied, the renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. So we have some important paragraphs here in Srila Prabhupada's purport, and what I'd like to do is take up a paragraph at a time because it makes good points. And I'd like to have the class, devotees from the class, in fact, take turns to read the purport. So Hariguru Prabhu, if you would oblige by reading the first para through the Srimad Bhagavatam verses and the para after that.
Purport. Fruitive activities seeking sense gratification are cause for material bondage. As long as one is engaged in activities aimed at improving the standard of bodily comfort, one is sure to transmigrate to different types of bodies, thereby continuing material bondage perpetually. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Verse 4-6, confirm this as follows. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yad indriya priti pritaya apanoti na sadhumanye yata atmanoyam asan api klesada asadeha parabhava stavad abodh jato yavan na jignasat atmatatvam yavat kriya stavad idam manovai karmatmakam yena sharira bandha evam mana karma vasham prayunkte avidyayatmani upadhiyamane prithirna yavan mai vasudeve na muchyate deha yogenatvat.
Yes, the next para.
People are mad after sense gratification and they do not know that this present body, which is full of miseries, is a result of one's fruitive activities in the past. Although this body is temporary, it is always giving one trouble in many ways. Therefore, to act for sense gratification is not good. One is considered to be a failure in life as long as he makes no inquiry about his real identity. As long as he does not know his real identity, he has to work for fruitive results for sense gratification. And as long as one is engrossed in the consciousness of sense gratification, one has to transmigrate from one body to another. Although the mind may be engrossed in fruitive activities and influenced by ignorance, one must develop a love for devotional service to Vasudeva. Only then can one have the opportunity to get out of the bondage of material existence.
Thank you, Prabhu. That is fine. We can stop here. So these are two important paragraphs of this key verse from the purport, and also important verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5. And these paragraphs and the three Bhagavatam verses are clearly pointing out why working for fruitive results and acting for sense gratification is not good for a living entity. People are actually mad after sense gratification. But they don't realize that this body that they have is always giving them trouble. They also don't know that the present body actually is due to past activities, karmic activities. In the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that based on the conceptual framework that one has and the desires that one has in the present life, one will get a suitable body. A body with a certain nose, a certain mouth, a certain shape, based on these things. If a living entity had some carnivorous desires, it may get a carnivorous body like a lion or a tiger, because that's the conceptual framework and the desires that it has, which translates into the next body. This is karma, the law of the for every action, there is a reaction. So people don't know that their present body is due to these past karmic activities. It is not to mention other problems with the body that we know. That, of course, it undergoes birth. There is old age, there is disease, and there is death. These are problems that even medical science nor society nor individuals have been able to overcome. Every living entity faces them. So these verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam that were read are saying that a person is a failure in life if he or she does not make any inquiry about their real identity. Krishna has talked about the real identity in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavatam verses say that if they do not know their true identity, then they will have to work for fruitive activities, for sense gratification. As long as one is engaged in these activities of sense gratification, one will remain entangled and perpetually bound to this periodic cycle of birth and death, transmigrating from one body to another, just like the body is changing garments or dress. And such a person will remain in bondage and is not liberated. such a person is entangled. That is what these verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam are conveying. And so the course that the Bhagavatam is recommending is to inquire into one's real identity. Athato Brahma Jignyasa, the first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. Now that you have obtained this human body, which is a very rare thing among the 4,444,000 species that live, to come to the human platform, it's a rare thing. Now that you have got this human body, inquire into the nature of the Absolute Truth. And what is the Absolute Truth? The second aphorism of Vedanta Sutra says, Janmadi Asya Atha, that from whom everything emanates. And what is the source from whom everything emanates? Krishna will say later in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 10th chapter, he will say, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Krishna will also say in the Bhagavad Gita the position of the living entities. In the 15th chapter, he will say, Mama evamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana mana sasthani indriyani prakriti sthani karsati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, as was concluded in the paragraph, is actually saying that although the mind may be engrossed in fruitive activities and influenced by ignorance, one must still develop a love for devotional service to Vasudev, Sri Krishna. Only then can one have the opportunity to get out of the bondage of material existence. So that was the message in these paragraphs of the purport. Shall we continue, Prabhu, with the next?
Therefore, jnana is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul, otherwise there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruit.
Yes, on.
So I repeat. Therefore, jnana is not sufficient for liberation. One has to act in the status of spirit soul. Otherwise, there is no escape from material bondage. Action in Krishna consciousness is not, however, action on the fruitive platform. Activities performed in full knowledge strengthen one's advancement in real knowledge. Without Krishna consciousness, mere renunciation of fruitive activities does not actually purify the heart of a conditioned soul. As long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness automatically helps one escape the result of fruitive action, so that one need not descend to the material platform. Therefore, action in Krishna consciousness is always superior to renunciation, which always entails a risk of falling. Renunciation without Krishna consciousness is incomplete, as is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Paramchita Buddhaya Hari Sambandhi Vasuntaha Mumukshubhi Parityago Vairagyam Falgu Kathyate. When persons eager to achieve liberation renounce things related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thinking them to be material, their renunciation is called incomplete. Renunciation is complete when it is in the knowledge that everything in existence belongs to the Lord and no one should claim proprietorship over anything. One should understand that factually nothing belongs to anyone. Then where is the question of renunciation? One who knows that everything is Krishna's property
is always situated in renunciation. Since everything belongs to Krishna, everything should be employed in the service of Krishna. This perfect form of action in Krishna consciousness is far better than any amount of artificial renunciation by a sannyasi of the Mayavadi school.
Thank you. So, what is said here is that jnana, knowledge alone, that I am not this body but spirit soul, is not sufficient for liberation. One can have this knowledge at the theoretical level, but unless one acts in the status of the spirit soul, that is, one acts in Krishna consciousness, there is no freedom from material bondage. There has to be action that follows this knowledge. This is action in Krishna consciousness. And this is to be distinguished then from renunciation on the fruitive platform. Now, how does that come about? It comes about through a simple logic that because these fruitive activities are keeping me bound in the material world, I can just abandon them. I can just stop fruitive activities. The Mayavadis think in this way. This is negative thinking. Just stop it and the problem will go away. This verse here is saying that without Krishna consciousness, it's not going to go away. Just merely abandoning fruitive activities, merely renouncing work or giving up fruitive activities. Actually, from what is being said here, and also the citation from Rupa Goswami, is now then it refines and points out the differences between acting in Krishna consciousness and renouncing fruitive activities per se. And we can, in fact, summarize them. What we heard is that activities performed in Krishna consciousness will strengthen one's advancement of knowledge. Whereas renunciation of fruitive activities without Krishna consciousness does not purify the heart of a conditioned soul. So a conditioned soul engaged in fruitive activities is not doing a wrong thing so long as he is dovetailed to Krishna, he's connected to Krishna. We saw that the living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme, so there is a connection there. My having this knowledge that I'm part and parcel of the Supreme automatically tells me that I should serve the Supreme, be dovetailed to the Supreme. This transference is not occurring in just merely renouncing fruitive activities. So it is troublesome if one just gives up fruitive activities, the purification has not occurred. On the other hand, while one is engaged in fruitive activities and takes on to devotional service, there is a possibility of purification for that process to lead one to liberation. So people who have merely renounced fruitive activities, they've renounced these activities in the material world, may also present trouble in another way. They may have renounced activities, but their mind may still be attached. They are pretenders, and such people are also talked about in the Bhagavad Gita's, that you have left this world, you've gone to the forest, but you're thinking you have desires still in the material world. So as long as the heart is not purified, one has to work on the fruitive platform. One has to work on the fruitive platform. But action in Krishna consciousness, because it is connected to Krishna, helps one escape the result or attachment to fruitive action, so one does not descend to the material platform. So the difference between merely engaging in fruitive activities without devotional service is attuned to becoming attached to the results of fruitive activities, becoming attached to the work itself. But carrying on fruitive activities with Krishna consciousness, one can become detached from the result of fruitive action, so one doesn't remain bound in the material world. Therefore, based on these considerations, action in Krishna consciousness is superior to mere renunciation of fruitive activities without Krishna consciousness. So, Rupa Goswami is pointing out in that verse that this type of renunciation of merely giving up fruitive activities is incomplete. Because persons who are eager to get liberation then even leave out the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They may abandon fruitive activity, but with that, they may also leave out the Supreme Personality. So, when one is in knowledge that everything belongs to Krishna and acts in that knowledge, then according to Rupa Goswami, renunciation is complete. Nothing wrong being in the world. One is doing one's duty, but at the same time realizing that it's all due to Krishna. Then one is working in the world, knowing one's quota. One knows that it's all the property of Krishna. As we have learned in the Sri Isha Upanishad, that one who is in knowledge knows what one's quota is. That is the person in Krishna consciousness. This person is also working in the world, unattached to results, and has all activities dovetailed to Krishna. So what one is, Rupa Goswami is still talking about this person, the person in Krishna consciousness, as being renounced in a complete way. What he's talking about, it's not renunciation of work per se, of fruitive activities per se. It is really renunciation of attachment to work and attachment to fruitive activity. One is actually detached to work, carrying it out for duty's sake, but at the same time is attached to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada, in his lectures, which he has given, and they are summarized in those lecture volumes, mentions this. You'll always have a situation in the world where you're not completely detached. If you are detached from one thing, you'll be attached to another. So why not have this position of detachment from fruitive activities and the material world, and attachment to Krishna, who is the supreme from which the living entity has emanated? So this is the key verse which substantiates this thesis that we started with, that action in Krishna consciousness is superior to renunciation, which I wanted to discuss. And since we are on this fifth chapter, I would also point out that there are other supportive verses which we'll just briefly go through. Yes. Sure.
As per the analysis of this purport, it's clear that what is superior is the renunciation of the attachment to fruits and the actions themselves, rather than giving up activity and not doing anything. However, this is clear from the Bhagavatam verse and also from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse. But what I was not clear on is the way it's been translated. If you read at the translation, it says that renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. So I'm not contesting anything. I was just trying to see how it might be a superficial way of expression, but is there anything?
Ultimately, renunciation of work through a difficult path can lead to liberation. It even talks about these Mayavadi sannyasis who initially take up the path of Brahman realization. They get frustrated and then they come back to the material world. And then they take on to altruistic, humanitarian and other activities. But finally, they may take on to Krishna consciousness and become liberated. It is a difficult path. Yes, it would be an indirect way of getting to liberation. You had any comments? Yeah. So it's a difficult road. Just like Krishna is pointing out in other parts of the Bhagavad Gita, that if you try to worship my impersonal form, it is possible to achieve me, but it is a very difficult path. Whereas those who worship me as the form, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, attain me readily. So what I was going to point out now, we don't have much time, but I just wanted to bring your attention to other verses that support this thesis, and that is chapter 5, text 3, where Krishna now talks about the attributes of this person who is properly renounced, the Rupa Goswami renouncement, that such a person neither hates nor desires for the fruits of his activity. He is always renounced. Such a person is free from all dualities, easily overcomes material bondage, and is completely liberated, O mighty Am Arjun. So one thing is pointing out is that this is a characteristic of this elevated soul, free from duality. Whatever may come, whatever may happen, whether there's a gain or loss, victory or defeat, the person is not affected. Person of steady mind. So that person is free from duality. He neither aspires nor does he lament. Hence he is liberated, Krishna says. Then Krishna also says in text 6 of the same chapter that merely renouncing all activities yet not engaging in devotional service of the Lord cannot make one happy. But a thoughtful person engaged in devotional service can achieve the supreme without delay. And here we have the example of the Mayavadi sannyasis and the Vaishnava sannyasis. The Mayavadi sannyasis are engaged in study of Vedanta the scriptures, Sankhya, not necessarily devotional service, and at the most they may contain Brahman realization. But the Vaishnava sannyasis are engaged in devotional service to the Lord. And in that devotional service, they are getting enlightened. They're feeling happiness. The Srimad Bhagavatam also says that such a person becomes very enlivened when he comes to devotional service. So they are happy. But those who are in Brahman platform are not, it being incomplete a realization. And text 7, one who works in devotion, who is a pure soul and who controls his mind and senses, is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. This is another attribute of one engaged in Krishna consciousness, because this living entity is seeing all living entities the same, that there is a spirit soul in all of them. He sees the Brahmana, the cow, and the human being all the same spiritual spark in all of them, and therefore doesn't have a problem with any living entity. And finally, and this is where the conclusion of today's topic will come, and that is text 12, that the steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the results of all activities to me, that is to Krishna. But as a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. So Krishna points out here again clearly the distinction between those who are engaged in work in devotion as to what they attain at the end of the road, as opposed to those who are engaged in fruitive activities without Krishna consciousness, that for them it is really the path of entanglement and remaining bound in the material world. So based on the discussion of these verses, we would like to conclude that action in Krishna consciousness is superior to mere renunciation of work or fruitive activities without Krishna consciousness. Well, thank you for your attention today. And if there are any more questions, I'll be happy. Do we have any time for a question or two? Okay. Yes, Ramesh Prabhu. Well, we can be engaged in material activities without being attached to them. At the same time, we take up devotional service, just like the way the grihasthas here at ISV are living, chanting the holy name of the Lord, remembering him, coming to the temple, worshipping the deity, offering prayers to the Lord, surrendering to the Lord, considering the Lord to be one's best friend, becoming the Lord's servant, and hearing about the Lord from elevated acharyas who come to our temple and from the lips of realized souls, you are engaging in devotional service. And this is the recommended process. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that sthane sthita, the famous verse, that one does not need to change one's position. Remain in your position, social position, whatever position you are in. At the same time, take up devotional service. And this is the process by which Mahaprabhu says that even the Lord becomes conquered. Otherwise, he is not conquerable by any other means. So it is even pleasing to Krishna that one has taken up this process. And the recommendation is not to give up activity in the material world. Those who are, of course, very advanced may come to the point that, as Krishna says in the third chapter, there is no duty for them. But even there, he's telling that to set an example to others in the living in this world, take up some work. And Krishna himself says that if I didn't work, there'll be chaos in all these planets and everything. So I'm also, as such, working. And so that is work in devotion, which is recommended. There's a question at the back, and then we'll have Sukeshwari and then Nilesh Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I remember asking this question to Vaisheshika Prabhu one time, and he had mentioned that he was talking about, I think it was Abhyase Senat Kaunteya Vairagyena Chagrahyate. So he mentioned that it's just the practice. You know, we may not be totally renounced in the beginning, but then just with practice, we will just achieve perfection.
That's correct. In fact, in this process of remaining in the world and taking on devotional service, what is going to happen ultimately, the way the dynamic goes, is you'll become more and more attached to devotional service and more detached to the material side. And finally, you'll come to the position of renunciation. But through that path, you would have purified your heart. Whereas in abrupt renunciation of fruitive activities, one doesn't go through that purification. Yeah,
so in this chapter also we read renunciation of work, and there is a like sthane sthita, like you just stay wherever you are. So then why it is recommended in the scriptures to take sannyas, and some people take, in the sense we have a lot of swamis and all. So what is the advantage of doing that, and what is the justification for that? Or,
well, as Krishna himself says here in that key verse that we read, that even renunciation of work can ultimately lead to liberation. One of the goals there would be liberation. But it is a tedious path without devotional service. Scriptures may recommend that in our line of this Bhagavata thinking, it is as such pure renunciation is not recommended, pure sannyas. It is really work in devotion, action in Krishna consciousness, which can lead to renunciation. But it is this path through a natural process, because there, as we said, purification of the heart is occurring. You're working in the material world, but you're practicing devotional service. You're purifying the mirror of the heart and getting to a point of that renunciation. Ultimately, you will reach the stage of higher taste, where these other things won't be that tasteful, if you will. They will become things of lower taste. So the goal is the same. It's to get liberation, but it's a hard path. And the yogis who renounce and then go and meditate are meditating mainly on the Paramatma feature of the Lord, on the Paramatma who's in the heart, and it takes quite a long time to attain him. And then again, Paramatma realization is considered to be only an aspect of the realization of God. It's a partial type of realization. It may give knowledge and liberation, but it may not necessarily give the type of bliss that comes from devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
I was referring to more like Vaishnava sannyas. What is Vaishnava sannyas?
Does anybody know what Vaishnava sannyas is? Well, there are Vaishnava sannyasis who have come to the position of renunciation through devotional service. That's what I understand. They have taken on to devotional service. It has become their main practice, and in the process, they have given up material activities. That is Vaishnava sannyas. But it's different from the Mayavadi sannyas, where you have given that up and you're thinking of Brahman.
I guess Nilesh Prabhu's question is more towards what is the justification for going from one stage in life to the other in terms of varnashram setup when you say sthanisthita? If I'm not very conversant with that shloka and the context in which it appears, the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Raya Ramananda, but I guess the question here is how does one adjust to this concept of what does it mean to make an adjustment in life to practice devotional service, and then on the one hand you also have to move on with life to the next ashram.
My understanding of sannyas, Vaishnava sannyas, of the stages you are talking about, is the ultimate stage in this Vaishnava development process, where one has been practicing devotional service in other stages. There may be a brahmachari, a grihastha, then vanaprastha, and then sannyas. So sannyas there is that final stage of this multi-stage process where they have practiced devotional service throughout and may come to a point where they feel they can give up this material activities. I think that's my understanding on Vaishnava sannyas. Would you like to add something to that?
I think it has to be seen in relation to one's service. See, like Prabhupada explains, I think it's in the Bhagavatam, he mentions that the man who takes changes his dress, you know, to sannyas in the Kali Yuga for the purpose of preaching Krishna consciousness is a different type of sannyas. So in other words, when one is taking on more and more responsibility for the spreading of Krishna consciousness, that's sannyas. You know, that's the consideration there, that one is accepting more responsibility and just taking it, internalizing more that this is my duty now is to serve Krishna more directly by trying to, you know, spread these teachings, share them with other people, and that's an internal thing actually. Somebody can even be remaining in a different social position, but if they're internally fully dedicating themselves to that purpose, then that is sannyas. And then of course, at some point they'll formally, you know, make the change like that. Like Prabhupada was functioning, practically speaking, as a sannyas even when he was in the Grihastha and Vanaprastha ashram, and then at one point he actually formally took sannyas. His godbrother insisted that, it was his godbrother, Madhav Maharaj, insisted that, yeah, now you have to take sannyas. So he did. He did the formal ceremony and he took sannyas. But, you know, Prabhupada was fully dedicated to executing the instruction of his spiritual master. So that's essentially sannyas. Full dedication to executing the instruction of the spiritual master for, you know, discharging the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world.
So he's still engaged in Krishna consciousness. He's still engaged in Krishna conscious activities. But he's at an advanced stage and has come to that progression where he's able to give it up.
So it would mean that you're
Yes. In terms of the whether early or late, it would be in those other parts, brahmachari, grihastha, vanasprata, all those stages. And then this sannyas that you are talking about is that end stage where devotional service has been practiced throughout. The person is able to spontaneously give it up. But once again, as Bhrugupati Prabhu pointed out, that the person is still engaged in Krishna conscious activities. He's carrying out not only his spiritual master's instructions, but is active in Krishna consciousness. So from a point of view of renunciation, if you were to ask, has he renounced everything? Not really. He has not renounced everything. He has renounced the world, but all his activities are now dovetailed to Krishna. In fact, one point that I came across as I was reading Srila Prabhupada's comments, further comments on some of the verses that we discussed today in the lectures that he has given, he mentions this thing that those who know that fruitive activities are binding and are bad want to abandon it, and also they want to call the material world as false. And he makes the distinction that it is not false, it is temporary. You and I here are talking, others are listening. It is all happening. It is not unreal, it is real. But the material world is temporary. So he says, knowing that, make the best use of a bad bargain and use everything in the material world for Krishna's activities. Dovetail everything to Krishna. So this work in devotion then is, we may be in the material world, we are using the tools and elements of the material world, but we are dovetailing everything to Krishna. We are as such not abandoning or giving it up. Yeah, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, we have been talking about devotional service, but in 5.4 it says, only the ignorant speak of devotional service as being different from the analytical study of material world. Those who are actually learned say that he who applies himself well to one of these paths achieves the results of both. So which means analytical study, Sankhya of material world should get you the same results, right?
If the goal is the same, if it's going to lead to Krishna, yes. And that's what the purport also points out, that where the goal is the same, then that path can lead to that. Yes, it is okay. There's no problem with it. Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna, we should stop here. Hare Bol. So I think next is Arthik. We have Damodarashtakam that will follow. And we'll be offering a candle to the Lordship. Thank you.